Welcome to Community in Code, a show where we talk to the humans behind the commits. I'm here today with a very special guest, a first for this show, a first for me personally. Welcome to the show, Her Majesty, the Queen of Ladonia. Welcome to the show, Your Majesty.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm going to tell the story of how this conversation came to be. And then for myself and anyone watching or listening, I will ask you to give sort of the elevator pitch of your journey to Ladonia and what your sort of elevator pitch is. So I was looking at the attendees list for WordCamp US, like you do when you work at a company who particularly is interested in like making technical partnerships and relationship, like build relationships with agencies and things. And I happened to notice somebody in the attendees list, Queen Carolyn of Ladonia. And I was like, that's weird. Is there a queen coming to WordCamp US? And it has you in your crown. And I was like, okay, what is this link? And I went to ladonia.org, and that sent me down a very long rabbit hole of there was a period of reading through things where I thought that like I was in an alternate reality, like I wasn't sure what was happening, and I had to go to ChatGPT and sort of contextualize it for me, like, what am I looking at? And then ChatGPT told me that that you in fact work at Yoast. And I was like, well, actually, it didn't actually say that you worked at Yoast. I found that out later when I did a search because it said that you were an SEO expert. And I'm like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But also now I have even more questions. So first of all, for those of us who may not know that Ladonia exists, what is a Ladonia and how did you come to be its queen?
So many questions there.
Yeah, right?
So Ladonia is a micronation. A micronation is, the official definition is a self-declared sovereign entity an entity that claims sovereignty. So basically it's like a country, but it's very tiny, and none of the big real countries acknowledge that we exist, kind of thing. So if you've heard of Sealand, which is on a abandoned Air Force sea platform, mm-hmm. off the coast of England, they are a micronation. I've met Prince Michael, nice guy. Melosia is in Nevada in the U.S., another micronation that you may or may not have heard of.
Where is that located?
Outside of Reno.
I must have driven by it. I mean, I've made that trek.
I don't know if you've driven by it. I feel like it's a 4-hour drive away from Reno.
Okay. But, so very far outside of Reno.
Yeah, it's not close. There's a new micronation in the U.S. that a lot of people have heard of called Slojamistan, which is named exactly for the reasons that you think it was. And then there's hundreds all over the place, but there's a few that are larger than others. Ladonia is one of the larger ones. It declared sovereignty it declared independence from Sweden in 1996 after 15, 16 years of court battles over these sculptures that an artist was making on the beach. And after a decade and a half of fighting back and forth and going all the way up to the Swedish Supreme Court, what eventually happened was Sweden was unable to force him to tear down or to effectuate the tearing down of the sculptures. They're still there, by the way. And he had started building those in 1980. So he and his lawyers and a group of interested parties got together and said, you know what, if Sweden can't implement and enforce their laws on this land, I don't think it's actually their land. So they declared the land on which these artworks sat an independent country, and thus began Ladonia.
Because it was like logistically difficult to send a team, or expensive to send a team out there to tear stuff down?
No.
They just didn't?
they just didn't, because he kept fighting the orders in court. So one of the first, I think the one of the foundational concepts we need to understand as Americans is that they don't have the same kind of private property laws in okay. Sweden that they have in the US. So on open land, like nature reserve type stuff, you can't tell people they can't walk on it. You can't shoot people off of it. You certainly can't shoot them if they're on your land. Like that stuff's not a thing. So he was building these sculptures. The first thing that the landowners tried to do was say that it was an illegally or improperly permitted house. Clearly it's not a house. So that argument fell flat. And then they tried to fine him for obstructing the public way. Also, it's really hard to get to. It's not impossible to get to. We get like 40,000 hikers every year, probably more than actually. So it's not an impossible hike, but it is, you have to go there on purpose. There's no such thing as obstructing the public way. You're going there on purpose. And that's so that also fell flat. I forget what they actually successfully fined him for, but it was a civil complaint. It wasn't a criminal complaint. He was acquitted of all the criminal charges. The fine he ended up getting was basically like $1,000, which is kind of a slap on the wrist, right? At one point, they did send a wrecker via water to steal one of the sculptures. There was a smaller sculpture that was capable of being extracted. It was like a cement. It was supposed to be the navel of the world, Omphalos. And they were going to take it and put it in a museum, but they broke it in the process. But they sent a wrecker out and they tried to steal it. And it's been set on fire before. Like, and they've sent out firefighters to put out the fire, which is baffling. So it's not impossible to get there. People go out there all the time. They could have torn it down if they wanted to, but they didn't. So anyway, that's how that was the foundation, effectively, of Ledonia. It started out, so 1996, there wasn't a lot of internet. Within the first year, they had a little over 1,000 people in the area that wanted to be citizens. So at that point, they proposed and ratified a constitution. They elected a queen. The form of government they decided on was a constitutional monarchy. So we had a queen and we had a president at the time. I was not the first queen. I'm actually the second queen. And shortly thereafter, they had a minister who was very good with internet stuff. That was how the internet presence started. Once the internet presence was established, though, interest and awareness of it really kind of took off. We started getting tons and tons of applications from all over. There was a big scandal where there were like 6,000 Pakistanis that wanted to sign up for citizenship. They had to shut down all the forms because they didn't understand that it wasn't a place that they could come live. Mm-hmm. That made the BBC, that made a whole bunch of like CNN. It was all over the news. That was also very helpful in terms of spreading awareness. But that's essentially how I became aware of Ledonia. I became aware of it in 1997-ish. So in 1994, I was involved in co-founding an internet service provider. There wasn't really a lot of web browsing back then because the web wasn't public until April of 95. But I was there at the beginning. So I was on the computer a lot. I did a lot of tech support of sitting around. I had two T1s. Like I was all over the internet all the time. Yeah. So our company was mentioned, or we had a little blurb about us in an issue of Wired, and it was the same issue that Sealand was in. And that sort of sent me down the rabbit hole of micronations, because I started researching Sealand. That's how I found Ledonia. Ledonia said that they were looking for people to help, build their government and design their government. And I was in political science at Purdue at the time. And I said, why? This sounds like something I might enjoy. I will apply for citizenship. So the citizenship application was actually really long. And part of it was you had to contribute your creativity. So being the overachiever that I am, I wrote this like 20-page business case on why Ladonia should annex Gary, Indiana, all the wonderful benefits of Gary, Indiana. And then I researched the political pathway to getting Indiana to release Gary to a foreign country, and then have the federal government approve that divestiture. Anyway, so I turned that in. They wrote back to me and said, we would love to have you as a citizen. By the way, we loved your contribution. Would you like to be a cabinet minister? And naturally I said, absolutely, I'd love to be a cabinet minister. Let's do this. So that was how I joined. And I joined, I think it was official in 98, 99.
That explains something because, well, what is your, I think that I know, cause I remember looking at it on the list, but for everyone else, what is your cabinet title, or what was your cabinet title?
My cabinet title, I was the Minister of Customizations and Gary.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I was, I have a friend named Gary and I was very confused by this as well. And I said, but she's the Minister of Customizations and Gary. So I guess she's your minister. And he's like, and he decided that that meant that he should start a Gary newsletter.
he could absolutely have a Gary.
For all the Garys.
He should become a citizen, and he could be my successor in the Ministry of Gary.
That's an interesting and enticing idea. I'll have to let him know.
That's how I came to Ladonia. Mm-hmm. I was there for 11 years before there was the constitutional crisis that put me on the throne. The queen that we had, we say that she disappeared. She kind of didn't want to play anymore. Mm-hmm. She fell off the face of the mat, wouldn't return phone calls. The Constitution says, though, that the cabinet with a supermajority vote can abdicate in absentia the queen.
And that was in place before this happened?
Oh, yeah. That was in the part of the original Constitution that was ratified in 1997.
So obviously folks were thinking about the possibility of like, yeah, if somebody just kind of falls off the map, then
off the map or like goes crazy with power. You always have to kind of anticipate that something is going to go pear-shaped and you're going to have to get rid of somebody against their will. You know, not everybody is going to be a nice person all the time. And we'd already had situations where there were presidents that have sort of been bullied out of office before their time. Nothing requiring a forcing of them out of office, though. It was more of a you can go by the stairs or you can go by the window, your choice, and they took the stairs. The queen, though, she just sort of vanished. So the cabinet voted her off the throne, and that made her heirs ineligible as well, which created a vacancy. The Constitution says when there's a vacancy on the throne and no eligible heirs, they take nominations from the cabinet, and the only people that can be nominated are citizens who are also women, because we only have queens in Ladonia. Men are not allowed to take the throne. So I was nominated. There were five other candidates nominated, one of which, though, was Angelina Jolie, and that doesn't really count. So I successfully petitioned to have her removed from the ballot on the grounds if she's not already a citizen. So fair. I didn't think that would be fair. Then there was an election. The voting lasted for 2 weeks, longest 2 weeks of my life. And then I won. And
this were you looking forward to being queen? Were you kind of apprehensive? What does that 2 weeks look like?
It was weird. And I was nervous. And I remember asking my husband, I'm like, this is weird. I should not do this. He goes, it's weird, but why not? Like how often does someone approach you and say, here, would you like to wear a tiara? I mean, obviously the answer is yes. I'm like, well, I mean, but I might have to do stuff, like go places and do stuff. And he goes, no, it'll be fun. It'll be fine. We'll do this. But I was nervous, and I was, you know, because I don't like to lose. Even if I didn't want to do something in the first place, I don't want to lose. That's no fun. And because they were all in Europe, a lot of the voting changed and happened in the middle of the night for me. So I would spend a lot of nights awake refreshing things.
Like you do. Yep.
As one does.
Yeah. And I mean, like you mentioned, like it's not just you, it's like your husband's on the website, your daughter's on the website, your daughter is actively doing stuff, as far as I know. Like this is it. This is like your queen for life. Do you anticipate like voluntarily abdicating at some point in the future, or are you full on in it? Like, is this how does that, like, what does the math of that look like?
I don't anticipate at this juncture abdicating for any reason, but you know, my daughter is, she's got a job, she's busy with her stuff. And this is a lot of work. I think part of the reason it's so much work is because I do most of the internet-y parts of it. And there's a lot that I probably could pass off to other people, but I just don't, because I need to protect it. But it is a lot of work, and it's not cheap. It would be irresponsible to use country money to, you know, to handle travel or to handle any of the other expenses. Mm. So I have to be able to fund it myself. I just don't know. I wouldn't want to dump that on her before she's ready or interested in it. And I'm still capable of doing it. So I'm going to continue running the show until I can't run the show anymore.
But you also have a normal job inside ostensibly the WordPress or greater web industry. It sounds like kind of you're working two jobs. Like you have your day job, and then you put on your crown, and then you have your queenly duties.
Yeah, I actually think I probably have more than two jobs at this point. But it is a lot of work. On the upside, because everything I do, real job and queen job, are internet based, I can do them wherever, whenever. So, you know, I'm doing things off my phone, I'm doing things off my laptop. I do a lot of international flights, which gives me a lot of, you know, 7-hour chunks of time to do what I need to do. And it's, you know, you use the technology to make it work. Like I've got my phone system set up so that it changes the icon based on which phone number is being called, so I know how to answer the phone. You know, those kinds of things. And then the emails and ChatGPT has been great, actually, because the translations are so much better than they were before. So I'm able to clear the inbox much quicker than before. But yeah, I work all the time. I'm at my computer at 6 in the morning. I'm lucky if I go to bed at 9. It's and by go to bed, I mean get off the computer, because it's pretty much up and then straight to the bed kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's busy.
Yeah. Obviously you could have entered in your information in the attendee registration form as your normal Yoast position occupying self. Are you attending as, like, will you be wearing a crown? Like, are you attending as royalty, or are you just wanted to sort of do more to, you mentioned earlier about trying to get the algorithm to sort of recognize you as the Queen of Ladonia. Was it
Well, the algorithm already recognizes me as the Queen of Ladonia. That's not an issue. You type in who's the Queen of Ladonia, there's a picture of me. So I'm not, that part I'm not worried about. I was looking at, I knew that I was going to be going on behalf of Yoast anyway. I assumed that they would be buying me a ticket, but when I was poking around, I noticed that there was a list of all the attendees, and I wasn't sure if that was everyone or just a select few. And there was a link, and I said, well, I could use some more backlinks to Ladonia. I think I have an account here. Let me just, you know, how much is it? $100? I can do $100. So it was more a test to see if the link would show up. And then I figured, let's roll with it. It'll be fun.
So do you have a ticket as your Yoast self?
I don't know if they went ahead and got me one or not, actually. They probably thought they didn't need to because I already have have one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll have to check. I just got back. What's today? Tuesday.
Wednesday.
I got back 2 days ago from a conference. I don't know what happened. Conference season used to be in the autumn, and it seems like everything shifted to summer because I've had like six conferences in the last 2 months. So that conference is still far enough ahead that I haven't started thinking that hard about it yet.
Yeah. Wow. It's we're ramping up to getting, so I'm thinking about it a lot. But I've been thinking about it a lot since I discovered Lidonia. So as a citizen, so obviously there's a website, and the website talks about like the history and the story that you told about the sculptures and the legal battles and all of that sort of stuff. And has a list of all of the ministries and ministers, of which there are many. And that's another thing that ChatGPT clued me in on, because I hadn't visited that page organically, and it's like, yeah, there's lots of like ministries with silly names. I'm like, there are.
And that came from the Wikipedia training data.
Well, it's funny because it was wrong about the specifics that it gave me, because it said that there are things like Minister of Silly Walks and Duke of something or other, and I was like, no, there's not either of those things.
There was. There was a Minister of Silly Walks. What happened to that?
So maybe it's old data.
It is old data. So I do know that ChatGPT right now is operating on a training set that is only up through, I think, June of 24. That being said, I know that our Wikipedia article is incredibly difficult to keep correct, because there's an editor who has a burr under his saddle about Lidonia in general and reverts all of the changes that I try to submit.
Okay. I imagined a conversation like, don't you know who I am? But we don't.
that's usually like, you don't know, you can't prove this. I'm like, and then, we don't like first party sources.
Oh. Right. Exactly. That would be the counter argument to that. So as anybody can apply for citizenship, and if you give a donation, you can have a title. Are there benefits of besides sort of being part of this kind of global experiment in governance to being a citizen? Like what is your pitch to your subjects?
Well, so the goal of pursuing and keeping Lidonia going, even after our founder passed away, unfortunately, in October of 21, is to raise funds and go out and actually do the maintenance on the artworks. So I don't spend a great deal of time entertaining the subjects. I actually focus most of my time on the legal wranglings around making sure that we have the continued access and right to maintain the artworks, because they are made of driftwood. They will, Nimbus especially, will collapse into the sea if we're not out there repairing it. There's so many visitors that come. There's nails sticking out everywhere. You know, it's a struggle to keep the artwork from falling apart. We want to keep it going to preserve Lars's legacy, because that was his life's work. And there are people that are trying to stop us from doing that. So it's there's a lot of really fun, like, internet stuff that I had to do to protect things too. Right after he died, he had a group that claimed his estate, and they wanted me to just turn over everything belonging to Lidonia, including the websites and the domain names and the bank accounts. And I'm like, no. Like, well, we're running it now. I'm like, yeah, but you're not, because it wasn't a singular thing that could any one person owned copyright over. So you didn't inherit it and it's not yours. And like, oh, but we're going to set up this foundation so that we can raise money. And when people Google Nimbus, we want them to come to our page. I'm like, aha, I see where this is going. No, you can't have it. So I immediately lawyered up and I secured trademarks for Lydonia in Sweden and the EU. And then I registered all the domains that I needed to so that they would not have a successful UDRP. And they tried to set up their competing website and it did not do well because I have all of the SEO authority for it. So I it was a good time.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a lot of, it harkens back to an early day of the internet when things were kind of less serious and more fun. I remember in college, I had stumbled across a website for the Universal Life Church where you could just click a few buttons and fill out a form and become an ordained minister of the Universal Yep. Life Church. And I was like, this is cool. I've got a printer. Let's become priests.
I have a friend who is a Baron of Lydonia and also an ordained minister in the Universal Life Church.
I don't know where my minister paperwork has gone. It's disappeared since 20 plus years ago.
And then for your title, you should use like Reverend Father or something like that.
this is very, very much in that vein. And I remember like one of the things sharing this experience of discovering Lydonia with a couple friends of mine, my friend Allison was saying that like it felt really not her words, but the vibe that I got was that it sort of felt cozy. Like this is kind of the thing that like this was her words. Like this is what my brain needed for like right now, for like things that are happening. It's like this I can like handle, like everything else maybe not, but this is nice. I like this.
So I think the attraction for a lot of people is they're, when you're born in a country, you don't really get the opportunity to not want to be from that country. Like you're stuck there. There's an accident of birth. You're stuck with it. This is something that that people actively choose. They seek it out and it's, you know, we're not trying to tell you how to live your life. We're not extracting taxes from you. It's very much, I'm doing this because I want to, not because I'm obligated to. And I think people like that. There are title collectors who are out there just to, you know, they want to be a lord or a lady, or they want to be a duchess, those kinds of things. But there's also people who just want a piece of paper that says they're part of something that they want to be part of, rather than they're part of, you know, every time there's an election in the US, we will get the losing side flooding to Lydonia. Mm. Which is interesting because we end up with a lot of citizens with very conflicting views, but they all kind of want the same thing, which is to be able to say that they're not from here. and they want a piece of paper that shows that. And we do really stress and fight for freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And that was really kind of what we were founded on. So we do things like we've done fundraisers to support some of our, we have a minister who is part of that, that protest group that protests topless all over the place. She goes to those things and we've run GoFundMes and fundraisers for her to send her to some of these protests, maybe to bail her out once in a while, that kind of stuff. I think people are attracted to that. I think we do have a pretty large LGBT contingent. And I know that particularly for our trans friends, they like having this certificate that shows them as they want to be, without having to go through all sorts of hoops and legal and expensive illegal things to get it done. So I think that that's something that's attractive to people that are looking for an alternate nationality, a chosen nationality, you know. Mm-hmm. And we do have, we try to do things. We've not been as successful in the small local get-togethers as I would have hoped, but we have done some. We've done some ennoblement ceremonies in Las Vegas. That was a lot of fun. Everybody was dressed up. We you know, went into the, one time we did it at the, in the lobby at the Bellagio. Was it the Bellagio? No, it was at the Wynn. With all the trees and the lights, and it was very pretty, and people took pictures, and it was just, it was a good time. So we try to do fun things.
You talked a little bit about like the legal stuff. What other sort of, I guess queenly duties, like what is the day in the life of a queen kind of look at? Like, it is unlikely that I will speak to a queen again, unless I shouldn't set myself up for failure.
Well, I mean, I would imagine that what I do is radically different from what a normal queen, much less a normal queen regnant, would do. Most queens in the universe these days are consorts, so they're the wife of the king. Because we don't have kings, I'm the head honcho, so I'm like Queen Elizabeth was, you know, I'm at the top of the pile. But I do a lot of, I would say, the administrative tasks that normal monarchs don't do.
It's almost more like the leader of a nonprofit or a company or an organization.
And we are a nonprofit. So we have I established a nonprofit organization in the US to keep the funds and the activities separate from my personal business. So we have the Ladonia Foundation, and actually we just got I just got my IRS letter. Never been so happy to get an IRS letter in my entire life. Yesterday, I'm always afraid when I open them, but I'm like, oh, this one's good. We have been granted official recognition from the federal government as a public charity. So we're a 501c3 organized under 509A2. Yeah, that's right. So we're for reals in terms of being a legitimate charity. Donations to be a noble are tax deductible now if you're a U.S. citizen. So all of that is very good. But I look over the applications for citizenship. I help them run background checks on people just to make sure that they're not, you know, you don't want people infiltrating the group that have bad intentions, or people that might be looking just to get a copy of something official so that they can counterfeit it and sell it. At one point we saw people, and it was some Chinese diploma mill, selling for lots of money diplomas from Ladonia University. And that was a joke that someone like mocked up a certificate and put it on the internet years ago. And they saw it like, oh, this must be real. And they started counterfeiting them. So you really kind of have to keep an eye out for people. There's especially in certain developing areas, there are people that will present access or membership in Ladonia as a means of entering Europe or being allowed to work in Europe. And it's not those things. And I don't want anyone to be taken advantage of. So we do try to make sure that we're properly vetting the applicants. So I do that. I manage the websites. I make sure that the hosting is secure. I make sure that we're not getting broken into or hacked. I've fixed some hacks before. When I first became queen, I had to rebuild everything, and I rebuilt it in WordPress because it was so hacked. Oh my God, it was really bad. And we were feeling the repercussions of how bad that hack was, because they were uploading the JPEGs with the executables into the upload directory and then triggering them. So we had tons of backlinks, which was great, but we had tons of backlinks for all the wrong reasons. So that was a mess. And then I had to develop, I developed the online application system so that we could keep track of all the citizenship records online. Thanks, Gravity Forms.
Ladonia is powered by Gravity Forms.
Then I set up the shop and we've got the souvenirs. So I help come up with things that we can sell in our shop, like we got fridge magnets. Fridge magnets, flags, lapel pins, medals. This is my 15th year on the throne, so we've got a new medal that's we're offering. And I don't know if you can tell, but there's like me on it. So we sell that in the shop too. It's like multiple businesses, because then I also have to, I'll fly over to Sweden to give tours to TV crews a few times a year. They'll call and they'll say, hey, we're going to come with a crew. We're going to do a documentary for a Japanese TV show. I'm like, cool. When should we be there?
Yeah.
And I fly over and I do those things, and I wear the tiara and I hike through the woods, all the fun stuff.
I hope you have just a ton of frequent flyer miles.
I have so many frequent flyer miles. It's not funny. I'm Premier 1K.
And so people make the trek. Like the website says it's like a 2.2 kilometer hike to get mm-hmm. there. I saw on the Herald that there are like maybe signs that are kept, or that's probably one of the things that needs to be maintained to sort of like allow or make it easier for people to make that hike.
We have to keep putting them up because there's rangers at the in that area that will take them down, or they'll put up signs that point the wrong direction. So
that's malicious.
It is super malicious. And then they had the audacity to put up QR codes to donate, but they get the donations. So it's a constant struggle. It's like, you want the tourists and you want their money, but you don't want to let us do the maintenance, but you're not doing the maintenance.
Right.
And it's been an ongoing, it's been a huge fight. I'm very friendly with my lawyer in Sweden, and we have an unreasonably large attorney's bill on a monthly basis, just dealing with all of that stuff. And that's part of the reason that we sell the things and we accept the donations, is because in addition to needing to fund the maintenance, we also have to pay the lawyers to be able to continue doing that. And really, I mean, I suppose we could walk away, but I feel like I was entrusted with the care of this when they elected me, and I accepted that responsibility. So I can't just walk away from that responsibility. You know, I took on this job. I can't quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In this conversation, I've tried not to myself use phrases like real or normal, but I've heard you say this. Because I want to like give it the respect that it is, but I've heard you say those things. And so there is like this, it's a level of tongue in cheekness, but also it feels like, no, we're still actually trying to do the thing too. It's like, we're doing the thing, and we're self-aware that we're like, we're not a recognized nation, but we're still going to do this because it is a collective, like it's still a group or an organization that is greater than a single thing. It's a some collection of individuals.
So, I mean, we really lean into the tongue in cheek for a reason. One of the reasons is if you take yourself too seriously and you present yourself as a separatist group, you will be treated like a separatist group. Mm. And what happens to separatist groups? Bad things happen to separatist groups. Yeah. So by maintaining a high level of humor, we can make ourselves, we don't want to inadvertently make ourselves look like a bigger threat than we are. So that's one thing. Does that mean that one of the things that I learned, in business, I started in business at a very young age, and political science, going through all everything. Everything is very arbitrary. Yes, there are rules, but why are there rules? There's rules because somebody made the rules, and they usually make the rules to preserve the status quo and protect what they want. So what is the function of a nation state these days? It used to be to provide protection. It used to be to provide services and whatnot for its residents. But what kind of protection are you really giving when, you know, borders are porous now? We're certainly not doing a good job keeping invaders out. Anybody can get missiles. Like, there's so much going on. I don't entirely understand how the nation state, as we've known it for the past, you know, however hundreds of years, is going to continue in its current form, other than just through force and inertia. It's not. I don't think it's necessary to preserve all of the borders exactly as they are right now. And that's another thing that I think makes it easier for people in certain parts of the world to be okay with the idea of a new state, because their borders were only established within their living memory.
Right.
Like, Pakistan didn't exist, was it 75 years ago? Something like that. There are people alive that remember when Pakistan wasn't a thing. There are people alive that were born in the USSR.
Yeah.
So they know that states can come and go and borders can be redrawn. In the US, though, nobody remembers the Revolutionary War. You know, in England, nobody remembers them not being a country. Nobody remembers Scotland being separate. Like, they say they do, but there's no actual awareness of that. So I think we could reasonably, if we're successful, demonstrate that we could have new political divisions and sections created, hopefully without bloodshed. Because really, if you look at all of the majority of prior nation making and state making, it's all involved a lot of bloody revolution. And I would like to think that humanity has grown to a point where we can have conversations and reach agreements about borders and groupings and political entities that doesn't involve bloodshed. And that's really kind of what I'm interested in doing, is how do we serve a group of constituents that's redundant. You know what I meant? How do we serve our constituents in a way that is useful to their lives, but also have this be recognized and acknowledged by these greater organizations that have decided that they own everything? And you can't get into the UN because you have to be sponsored by another state, and none of the other states, part of the charter is you're not going to violate the territorial integrity of any of the member states, and everybody's claimed all of the land everywhere. So you can't make a new state, because anyone who's trying to make a new state is violating the territorial integrity of somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just all very arbitrary. And I would personally like to see if we can do anything to move that a little bit, because it's not, I don't know. I don't know that it's going to continue to be useful to run the way it is right now. I don't know if that got really deep. Sorry.
Well, no, I think that's, I love that there is equal parts like satire and that level of seriousness and levity. It's very much like, you know, the Monty Python telling the story of history or something, you know, where we're making fun, but also we're making fun of very real things. And like, you know, the conversation, like it's the scene where the anachro commune with King, you know, King Arthur and the anarcho-communist conversation, which it's a very real conversation, but it's a very hugely ridiculous, like surreal, like this wouldn't happen, but it's bringing up very real things. And I think that that's the perfect delivery mechanism for like actual sort of social or political commentary is through humor.
I was working on a book. I wanted to explain, like, one of the things I get a lot personally is you're not a real queen. Mm. Can't elect a queen. You can have an elective monarchy. Elective monarchies exist. These things are not unheard of in history, and people don't talk about it. It's Belgium, right? Who are the Belgians? Are the Belgians a nationality? Are they an ethnicity? One of the things is you can't have a country because you don't have a historical claim to a cohesive group of people that share a common culture, right? There's no such thing as Belgians. Belgians is a new thing, and it was a new thing. It's younger than the United States by, I think, 100 years. There is no ethnic group of people called Belgians. There's like a bunch of different states, and they were all part of either France or Denmark or Flanders and Germans. And they're all like kind of mishmashed in this little area. And because they were trying to get away from, you know, being tossed back and forth, I think it was between France and the Danes. Now I'm spacing on some of the details. They eventually decided to try to make their own country, and they tried to do it twice. The second time stuck. They elected a king. Was he always the king? No. They elected him. That was an election. The Vatican is an absolute monarchy, and that monarch is the Pope, and he's elected every time because they're priests and they don't have children. But that's another story. Mexico had an emperor, and the emperor was just installed by Napoleon, I think. Yeah, it was one of the younger brothers of the Habsburg Empire. And then the U.S. decided that we didn't want a monarchy on North America, on our continent. So we gave a bunch of guns to them, and I think to Benito Juarez. And he put Emperor Maximilian up against a wall and killed him. But anyway, that's another story. There's a lot of things. So when I get this pushback, like you can't do X because of Y, I can think of historical precedents where absolutely I can. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't make it not real. This just makes it not something you're used to seeing. So yeah. Just because it's something's not familiar to you doesn't make it fake.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Your Majesty, for coming on my humble little show. Do you have any sort of parting thoughts or links that you want to share, or anything that you would like to say for anyone that finds this podcast episode or this video on the internet?
Oh, geez. Well, if you're interested in supporting us and our maintenance of the artworks in Sweden, or supporting our efforts to, you know, just try to redefine what a nation state is, you can go to ladonia.org, and that is our primary website. You can make donations. You can become a citizen if you're interested in a noble title. I think I can make that happen for you too. It's pretty self-explanatory, but if you have any questions, we've got a phone number that's on the website. We've got email that's also
on
the
website. Who answers the phone for Ladonia?
my secretary. So, yeah, and that's a long story. That's a long story. Anyway, so we do have a phone number if anyone wants to call. I'll be at WordCamp, so you can probably find me at the Yoast booth if you look hard enough. I will not be wearing the crown because you don't wear diamonds in the daytime, for one thing, and you also don't wear the heavy duty jewelry when you're not in white tie or at a state event, and this does not qualify as those things. So I will not be wearing the big heavy hardware.
I am learning so much about royal protocol.
Oh my gosh, I have a protocol officer who helps me pick wardrobes, tells me what I need to wear when. There's like, so I get a lot of awards. I have a lot of orders and medals that I've received from other places. And there's a protocol in terms of what you wear, in what position, in what combination, based on where you're going, who's hosting, and who you're representing. So he's got like this line, IKEA line drawing, basically, of a lady in a gown, and be like, okay, you wear this sash, you wear it left to right or right to left, and then you wear these pins in this location. He like colors it in for me, so I have a color coded map of what I'm supposed to pack and where I'm supposed to attach it to the dress. So it's I have learned a great deal through the course of this adventure.
Well, thanks again for your royal benevolence, and also for coming on to my show. And I'll see you in a month at WordCamp, although that will have already happened by the time this episode comes out. But anybody who's watching or seeing this can go to ladonia.org and learn all the things and go down the rabbit hole that I went down. And again, thanks for coming on, and we'll see you on the internet.
Thanks for having me.